Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Back with you after that incredible month and spectacular success thanks to your efforts. And to those of you who have made pledges and promises of money for the future for WBAI but did not give a credit card to secure it, please get those monies right in. This is especially true if you've made donations for the workshop that we're doing at the Open Center, where there was only a limited amount, but the people who promised to send that money in, that must get in right away because that workshop is limited. Today I want to talk to you about fear and panic. Panic, just one of the good things that I like to talk about, because panic is just this incredible feeling. Think about somebody in panic. Think about the way they look. They have the stark look of terror in their eyes. Their pupils are dilated. They're like, it's a terrible thing to see in people. Sometimes, you know, as a policeman or a fireman or a hospital worker, you see a lot of panic in people. And your job is to calm them down. My job as a psychotherapist who's worked with people for so many years is to sometimes see this in people and to say to them, it's okay. What's the big deal about that? Why is it's okay such an important thing? Because at a moment that a person feels panic, nothing is okay. It's a horrible feeling of dread. Anxiety itself, that nervous energy that we have, not necessarily bad, because anxiety, excitement, they're kind of similar. You know, it's a high state of energy, and it could be okay. Panic, disaster, terrible, terrible feeling. Let me describe it to you. A panic attack. It's like in the world right now, and I think I speak for many of us, we're nervous about a lot of things. Are our college retirement funds going to be enough when we need them? Will we keep or get a job? Will we lose our job? What about our health insurance? Are we covered enough? What if we get sick? What if we don't have health insurance? We've just gone through a period where many people believed that we could get great financial rewards with low risks. It was a period, the period of the last 10 years. You thought, well, you take a chance. You know, you buy a house, it'll be worth more. You invest in something, it'll be worth more. Foolish of us calling it investing. We really meant buying it, you know, buying something that nobody else wanted. Now we see that it wasn't true, that in fact there was a great deal of risk. But now we've gone to the other extreme, seeing danger everywhere, and people are now seeing danger everywhere without taking the time to rationally assess the reality. People are having more worries and panic reactions than they did in the past. Who could blame you? You turn around and something you believed in is gone. Something you thought was for sure is no longer there. So how do we analyze risks, and why are we sometimes so bad at it? You know, we're not generally taught well how to think about risks. We're not taught how to cope with uncertainty. We tend to want answers. It's kind of black and white without a whole lot of gray. Think about nature. You think about rabbits. Rabbits run and they scurry and they're very, very fast. And so are prairie voles, very, very fast. They can kind of move along. And they're afraid of shadows. Now, why are they afraid of shadows? Because hawks, eagles, things that'll fly out of the sky can come down and get you. You were taught not to be out in the open too much, you know, which leads us to one of the important issues about panic attacks. I want to talk about panic attacks with agoraphobia and panic attacks without agoraphobia. First, we're going to talk about agoraphobia itself. Agoraphobia, is that fear of sweaters? No. Agora sweaters. Agoraphobia, everybody thinks it's fear of open spaces. That's what they call agoraphobia. No, it's not exactly that. It's close to that, because what agoraphobia is a fear that is that you may be in a place that is difficult to escape. Agoraphobia could take place anywhere. It could take place in a subway, where it's hard for you to get away. It could take place on an open field, but it's hard for you to escape. Hard for you to get away is the basis of agoraphobia. Part of our natural defense system. Part of what nature gives us. Agoraphobic reactions. Some people who are agoraphobic never go out. They stay at home. In fact, with the advent of the internet, the BlackBerry, the cell phone, and the telephone itself, plus TV and being able to buy on TV, agoraphobic people have wound up staying home and not going out at all. You can have anything delivered if you live in New York. It's going to come your way, you know. You could find almost anything. And there are many people who live in apartments who never leave their apartments. Some of you which are listening right now. And you don't know why, because when you go outside and you get outside your door, you feel this sense of panic. Panic. What is panic? Well, the idea of something being called panic means that it has to have a number of symptoms to it. A panic attack. Now, here are the criteria for a panic attack. Four of these are all that you need. Now, keep in mind, when we're calling it a panic attack, we're going to say it's sudden onset. This suddenly happens to you. Number one, your heart gets funny. Either palpitations, pounding heart, or accelerated heart rate. Number two, sweating. Number three, trembling or shaking. Remember, you only need four of these. Number four, sensations of shortness of breath or smothering. You can't catch your breath. Number five, feeling of choking. Number six, chest pain or discomfort. Sometimes it hurts, you know, right across your chest it hurts. Number seven, it could be nausea or abdominal distress. Many people, when they're having a panic attack, feel like vomiting. Number eight is dizziness, lightheadedness, or faint. You feel like you're going to fall down. Number nine is derealization, which is a feeling of unreality, like you don't even know the world you're in anymore. Number 10 is fear of losing control or going crazy. When you're having a panic attack, believe me, you feel like you're going crazy. You're out of your mind, which is an absolute truth. I mean, it's a good description. You're out of your mind. Wherever your mind is, it left for the moment. And all you see now is survival and fear. Going along with these symptoms are the fear of dying. Then there's another symptom called paresthesias, which is like paresthesis, but paresthesias, which is the numbness or tingling sensations. Number 13, there are chills or hot flashes. Now, you have all of these things going on at once, or some of these going on at once. If you have four of these happening, you're having a panic attack. Now, keep in mind, there are two kinds of panic attacks. One is a panic attack that is unexpected, and the other is one that is situationally bound. A situationally bound panic attack is one that is very predictable. Throw me in a room full of snakes, and I'm going to have a panic attack. Not me, but somebody else who has a fear of snakes, you throw them in a room with snakes, and they're going to have a panic attack. Right? That's a predictable, situationally predisposed. It's definitely, especially if you're afraid of snakes. Let's say you grew up and snakes are friendly. I've seen pictures of children in the Middle East playing with snakes. Snakes are friendly to them. It wouldn't necessarily frighten them to be in a room filled with snakes. Then there's the unexpected panic attack, the one that has no rhyme or reason. You don't really know why it's happening. It's coming up out of nowhere. So that's one, the unexpected panic attack. And the other one is the situationally predisposed or the situationally bound panic attack. There's a third kind, which is situationally predisposed, meaning according to what mood you're in, you may or may not have a panic attack based on some stimulation that are familiar to you, you know, that scare you. Like if you see a mouse and you're afraid of mice. But if you're in a really good mood, that mouse may not scare you. But if you're in a really funky mood, that mouse might terrify you. Panic attacks. What do you do about them? Where are they coming from? What are they about? Is it all about risk? The major way most of us deal with risk is not through analytical calculation, but through our gut instinct. There's a kind of like a mental rule of thumb that we use for grappling with risk. Specialists in the field have found that certain factors make people perceive things as risky, even if they really aren't. And other factors make us ignore real danger. So one issue here is how much information is available. If the story is all over the news media, for example, a terrorist attack or a campus shooting, then people believe the risk is high, even if the probability of such catastrophic affecting them is actually very low. So put people into the press and scare them and get them ready and tell them there's something on the subway that could happen to you any now and it looks like a white powder. And there are going to be people walking around who are predisposed to panic. Then just at that moment, jump out of the shadows and say, boo, and watch what happens. I mean, people may, you know, chop your head off because they're ready for it. There's a part of the body that once it gets predisposed, it's ready for it. Do you have panic attacks? Do you have these feelings? Another factor is whether the risk is assumed or imposed. If you take on the risk, you tend less to have a better reaction than if the risk is imposed on you. So, for example, people with smoking had, you know, many people risk by smoking. Other people had real panic attacks due to the secondhand smoke. They would have to get out of a room if they smelled smoke because they would feel more anxiety with smelling smoke than they did by smoking. We also lump together risks and benefits. It's common wisdom in the investment world that the riskier the investment, the greater the potential profit. But in everyday life, we tend to view things differently. If we see great benefits in what we're doing, like driving a car, we tend to view the risk as low. Even though the number one cause of injury in the United States is automobile accidents. So the number one cause of injury, deaths, I'm sorry, is automobile accidents. But we see no risk. We drive, and since we're in control of the car, we tend to think there is no risk. Then there's the way we look at bad luck and disasters. We tend to believe that while terrible things do happen, they happen to other people. And largely to people, get this, to people who deserve them. We kind of look at misfortune as saying that's the dues you get. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Do you have any panic attacks? Let's talk about what makes a panic attack. Panic attacks and panic disorders are created by a subconscious region, which originates in the part of the brain responsible for storing and actuating the anxiety response. This place is called the amygdala. You've heard me talk about it before. This little almond-shaped sized organ that we have, a tiny little thing. The amygdala. The anxiety and the panic response is a pre-programmed response which is present from birth. So we each have inside of us, in this little amygdala, this tiny little nut in our brain, this kind of get out of here, get out of the situation, watch out, terror. you know, in our little amygdala. If we could bypass the amygdala, we would never have this. If you had your amygdala removed, you'd never have this panic attack. You don't want your amygdala removed. You need it. It's a seat of many things. The level of normal anxiety is preset generally, but can be modified through behavior. And it could be modified through other chemistries. There are times that you're more sensitive than other times. There are times that the amygdala is going to respond and other times that it's not going to respond. The amygdala, like all areas of the brain, can be affected by medication. However, there's no clear evidence to suggest that medication can eliminate panic attacks by addressing the amygdala directly. Nobody's been able to say, take this pill, it'll calm down your amygdala. All they do is give you a pill to calm down the rest of you so that the amygdala doesn't fire as strongly. But do you have panic attacks? I mean, do you, listening, do you ever have a panic attack? Do you ever have fearful attacks? How about waking dreams? How about waking in the middle of the night and having a terror of some kind? I'll tell you right up front. If you have kind of panic attacks, it means that there is some part of you that is saying, I have potential death. I could die. And it's something to address. It's kind of an amazing thing that you even talk about the things that might trigger a panic attack reduces the chance of that creating a panic attack. So let's say you were to sit with someone and talk with someone about the things that cause panic attacks. The more you talk about it, the less you have the panic attacks, because by talking about it, you create an image of it. And by going through an image of it without having a panic attack, like for instance, let's say you're afraid of snakes. And you talk to somebody and you say to them, I'm terrified of snakes. And they say to you, what kind of snakes? And you say, black snakes and white snakes and green snakes and red snakes. Say, give me a picture of them. What do they look like? Well, I see 100 snakes. Ugh, it's really killing me. I see 100 snakes. Well, tell me what you do. I see 100 snakes in a room. The more you talk about it, the more it reduces the reaction that you're going to have to it. Therefore, there is some kind of case for psychotherapy as being a way of healing a constant panic attack, if you talk about it in some way. It's an amazing thing, my friends. We have this amazing mechanism in our brains, and on top of our amazing mechanism, we have this this wonderful human system. But sometimes it just goes out of whack. Phobias are another form of kind of high anxiety disorder that cripple us. And they also work in the amygdala. Phobias get associated with certain things. You have a phobia is an association of a panic disorder with certain conditions. You could be afraid of being in public, being with people. You could be afraid of stress. You could be afraid of, you know, things in general. It could be like a small phobia. It could be afraid of water. It could be afraid of flying. All of these things have one thing in common. These things create panic attacks. So a phobic reaction is a panic reaction. You're trying to control yourself from having that panic reaction. So people who are washing their hands are washing it with the energy of somebody who is having an almost near panic reaction. They're washing and they're washing and they're washing and they're washing. And they're washing so hard and they're waiting for the panic to subside. People who go out of the house and they have to check their doors, they're checking their door, they're checking their door, they're checking their door, and they feel near panic until the panic subsides. Does he understand it? Panic about other things, about people leaving you. All these kind of panics have some kind of roots to them in your life. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We haven't taken your calls in a month. 212-209-2900 is our number. We want to hear from you. Yes, we want to hear from you. We want to talk to you. We want to find out from you what you go through, you know, what you deal with. The amygdala, that thing we talked about, also impacts fear memory by knocking on the door of the hippocampus. So that's another thing, another dominant organ that's in start there. This allows for a faster interpretation and action response the next time around. So here's what happens. You have a panic attack, and whether or not you learn from it becomes important. If you learn that there was no danger in the first place, you have a better learning for the next time you have less of a panic attack. But if that panic attack takes you over and you run from the thing you're running from, it just increases it. The more you don't do the thing that, the more you follow the command of the panic attack, the more you follow it, the more it's going to dominate your life. And we don't want our life dominated, huh? It's just not fun. 212-209-2900 is our number. Hey, Michael, welcome back. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
My name is Jean Michelle. I'm from New Jersey. And I've been having panic attacks, but they've actually been much, much better. And I found that self-talk is really valuable.
Well, give me an example of your panic attack, Jean Michelle.
Well, in the beginning, like when 9/11 occurred, I would not go on a train. Mm-hmm. I've had a hard time leaving. I lived in the city, leaving the apartment, and being in, you know, big open places and stuff like that. And now that I'm in Jersey, I still feel that same way. And now I'm afraid to be at home alone because I don't know anyone. And when I go out, I just think it's going to be worse.
Now, before 9/11, did you have this fear?
No. No, I didn't.
Okay. And then were you living with your family at that time?
No, I was living by myself.
You were living by yourself. So then after 9/11, did you question whether living alone was wise or not?
No, actually, I was in a state of constant anxiety that I wasn't able to really think or do any self-reflection. Although I tried, I would just be so consumed with like avoiding everything that would cause me anxiety and possibly, like, the anxiety was mostly the fear of having the panic attack.
The fear of having the panic attack. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you've had panic attacks, right? You know what they're like. Can you describe what they were like for you, Jean?
Well, the first one I had was on the train, and I, you know, just out of the blue, I felt like I was going to die, and I just didn't understand it, and I didn't know what was going to happen. And the fear was, oh, my gosh, I'm on the train. Something bad's going to happen, and I'm going to be in even bigger danger.
Couldn't escape was a big thing.
Yeah, I couldn't escape, and on top of that.
That's the agoraphobia that goes with the panic.
And then I felt that if I were out cold, I would either get robbed, mistreated, or no one would really come to help me. Because
out cold, meaning if you passed out.
If I passed out, yeah.
Kind of makes sense, you know what I mean? It's like an animal who's wounded, mm-hmm. who says, I better not let the animals know I'm wounded because they'll eat me up.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And I'm going to get robbed or something like that. So now I have this double panic of, I am feeling panic, but I got to keep myself somehow composed to get through this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then?
That's even more difficult because needing to control what I can't seem to control is like it's very frightening. It's like, how do I do this? So eventually, I guess by just when I just looking for ways of surviving with this stuff, I looked things up and in the middle of work, when I would feel a panic attack coming on, I would go to the bathroom and just lock myself in one of the stalls and put a couple of drops of essential oils on my wrist and take really, really deep breaths just to, like, feel safe and not bombarded by my surroundings. And
you bring up a very important point.
Mm-hmm.
One of the essential parts of a panic attack is hyperventilation. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about deep breaths, the real key of the deep breath is the exhale. The exhale is more important than the actual deep breath because what you're doing is you're building up carbon dioxide, and the carbon dioxide that happens with hyperventilation induces the panic even further. You sit in a stall, you put a couple of essential oils on your wrists or wherever you put them, and you calm yourself down. But notice the big thing you did was you limited your environment.
Mm-hmm.
When you closed that stall, there was nothing could hurt you because you were in a protected environment.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important. That helps serve you to, okay, we may be safe.
Yeah.
You know, we're safe. And then you do your breathing, which says, okay, calm down, calm down, calm down. I think we're safe.
Yeah, okay. And that allowed me to refocus where I was all scattered normally from the panic coming on. I would be able to at least focus a little bit more.
Well, Jean Michel, that's kind of amazing that you did that. Now, you talk about self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
What is the self-talk that you did?
The self-talk is that I always have my tools. That and that the panic attacks don't last that long. That I may think they last that long, but I look it up on the computer and stuff, and it always says it doesn't really last that long. So I tell myself the fact is that it's not going to last that long. That if it's going to happen, I have the tools. Just always have those tools around, you know, available. And whether they're there or not, the panic attack is going to go away.
There's a very important point about that, because I think I was looking up we were doing some research on how long a panic attack lasts.
Mm-hmm.
And what we couldn't find the exact amount. I always believe it lasts 22 minutes
mm-hmm.
at the very most. And the reason I believe it is because we get exhausted. You see, when you fire those signals so often, and your brain is firing, and it's firing your neurons so much, you get exhausted from it. So just by the nature of sheer exhaustion, panic attacks disappear. But what happens to people is they get panicky, and then they go on and proceed, trying to control,
mm-hmm.
and they get more and more frightened. So going through it, you're absolutely right. You remind yourself, it's not so scary, right? I can get through this.
It'll be over. I mean, the only thing that I'm still afraid of is having it somewhere in public. But even then, I kind of like say, okay, let's just quietly and calmly find a safe place, if it's possible. And I think after practicing so much, it kind of is not as frightening anymore. And I don't live around the panic as much, even though I still do, but it's not as much. I can enjoy life a little bit more, and it's a lot better.
Jean Michel, do you have any relationships?
Yeah, I do.
Tell me about that.
I have a husband, and I moved to Jersey to be with him, and I don't know anyone here, and so I've been feeling quite lonely. All my friends and everything are in New York, which isn't so far away, but there's still that it's not that easy to communicate and get together. So, but that's a difficult relationship. He really doesn't have the comfort level to kind of listen and talk and kind of sense anything that I'm trying to share with him. So I feel like even more cornered and isolated.
Yeah, so you get this, you have this feeling of being, I heard it in your voice, that where you are in the marriage that you're in, your husband doesn't have the tolerance to hear about worries that he knows are not real worries. So he doesn't have that tolerance. He tends to be... And your girlfriends, the friends that you had in New York, who would listen to you, who would talk to you, they're not as available.
No,
because
that's
you're living over there. So how are you going to deal with this?
I've been trying to keep in touch with my friends and calling them just to have conversations and feel like I'm not so isolated and alone and kind of vulnerable out here, even though I'm not vulnerable. I've tried that. I really don't know what else to do.
Well, it sounds like you've got to learn a way to communicate with your husband how important it is that he takes you so seriously that it'll help the panic pass. And it's hard for you to communicate it to him.
Yeah, it is.
But there is a way for you to do it. There is a way, say, for my birthday, I want you to sit and listen to me for 10 minutes.
Oh, I
want to tell you something. And I need to tell you this because it is very important to me. And, honey, even though you may not believe half the things that frighten me, I want you to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because many mates don't understand that it's the feeling that counts, not the facts.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good
because
one.
Because he'll look at the facts and he'll say, oh, there's nothing to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't understand what's going on inside of you.
No, he's very pragmatic. He's just like, oh, okay.
Which is part of why you married him.
Yeah,
you like that. Hey, listen, we have to go out. We have to take a short break. And thank you for calling in. Thank you so much. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
This is Lawrence Block, and you're listening to WBAI in New York City. Listener-supported and non-commercial.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Fascinating thing, and it's not as confusing as you think. Tune into The Positive Mind Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 p.m. and learn about why we do the things we do. This is Armand DeMille, The Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 p.m. And we're here talking with you today about panic attacks and fear. And welcome back, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you. So we have this wonderful organ called the amygdala, which causes a lot of problems for us and a lot of things. You can't get rid of it. It's like our little machine that keeps our energy going. It's got good news and it's got bad news. And when it short fires, when it short circuits, oh my gosh, does that feel terrible. 212-209-2900. We're taking your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to Dr. DeMille.
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, how are you? This is Mike. Yeah, when I was a kid, I had a lot of panic attacks.
Mike, are you on a cell phone?
Yeah.
Could you talk directly into the cell phone? Because it's just a little distance. Go ahead.
Sure, how's this? Better?
Oh, much better, much better.
Yeah, I remember, speaking of panic attacks, I had a lot when I was a kid, especially when I was in church and in a place in public where I felt like I didn't want to cause a scene to get up and leave, so somehow I always kind of controlled it. Like, I never got to the point of actually panicking and running out, but I always felt like I would.
Yeah, see, you're kind of proving that point about the danger. The danger is, how do I escape?
Right.
And you couldn't escape, so you sat through it, and you were feeling this kind of panicky feeling, and you sat through it, and you would tell yourself, just go through it, go through it, go through it, and nobody knew what you were feeling.
No.
I mean, who would you be with? Where would you be?
Well, if it was in church, it was probably with my parents.
Now imagine, how old were you at the time, Mike?
Probably 10 or 11.
A 10 or 11-year-old boy sitting with his parents, having a panic attack, and the parents don't notice.
No.
This is tough news. This drives a young boy like Mike into his mind, feeling that I'm going to die and nobody's going to know it and nobody's going to pay attention to me, that makes growing up rough.
Yeah.
You know? How did you ever get a relationship? How did you ever get to where you could get close to anybody? Who could you ever trust?
Yeah, true. I always was the oldest. I would always babysit my younger siblings and always had responsibilities, never thinking about myself.
So that's the secret. The secret nowadays is, one of the ways you escape your own fear is to think about other people and not think about yourself? Is that what you do nowadays?
Now I'm better now. I'm more open. Actually, I've been coming to see your center for a while. And I'm feeling much, much better. I'm more open. I'm thinking more for myself rather than just others. You know, I'm doing my, I'm doing my own thing, which, being a kid, like now that I'm back at it, I could see how I'm thinking differently. It's not the same as it was when I was, younger. And I'm just seeing life in a whole new different way.
Yeah, great for you. Good for you, Mike.
Thanks.
Well, I'm really glad. I'm glad you could see that change because, you could just find. What do you think the essential part of your change has been? Finding somebody to talk to who listens to you? Going through the emotions? What do you think is the essential part of it?
Yeah, I think it's the connection with other people, especially finding out that other people have the same thing. Like, when I was 9, I remember having a panic attack, running outside and not knowing if anybody had the same type of thing. Am I, what's wrong with me? And I'm the only one who's going through this. And never really expressed my emotions to anybody. I would always hold everything in. So I had to be a strong one.
Well, little wonder. I mean, from what you told me, you sit in a church with your parents and you feel like you're dying. And they don't recognize
sort of like,
it.
Like a feeling of like, for some reason, like I have to get out, or if I need to escape or get out.
Sure.
I didn't want to cause a scene. I didn't want to cause attention towards me. So I would sit there and take it all in and not, I don't know, it was just a weird feeling. But
have you ever gone crazy just for kicks?
You mean like just go out and, yeah, sometimes. You mean like party or just...
Yeah, just when you party. Just sometimes out of your mind partying. Have you done that?
Yeah. I would go out growing up, like, either hitting bars and just having a good time with people. And,
so are you saying that alcohol would reduce the amount of panic potential that you would have?
Yeah, I think it would loosen you up.
I think you're learning something. I think you're teaching us all something, because many people, I believe, especially the people who are alcoholics, are controlling panic attacks.
Yeah.
I think many people, the ones who use alcohol and drugs, are in some way with that same feeling of panic, but they don't know how to control it, so they're trying to take a medication. And alcohol is a medication, and cigarettes are a medication, and cocaine is a medication, and diet pills are medication. These are all medications meant to control this primary little organ, the function of the amygdala, because it kind of gives you that feeling of fear.
Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing. Some people are lucky. They find therapy or something like that, and it works for them.
Mike,
I want to thank you for calling
in. Thank you. Thanks. Sure. Great show. Thanks.
Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. 212-209-2900. Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, great. Hi.
Hi there.
I wanted to speak with you about my panic attacks.
Tell me.
I have them when I'm driving not that I do it anymore because I've kind of given up on it, driving on the highway.
On the highway specifically?
Yes.
Boy, you know, different people have different kinds of panic when driving. Sometimes it's highways, sometimes it's tunnels, sometimes it's bridges. For you, it's on the highway. Now, tell me about what happens to you. Did you, would you have these panic attacks like when you hit the interstate or what?
As soon as I get on the highway and everyone is going fast and I can see that there's no red lights or no place to get off.
Well, you see, you gave us the key word again. No place to get off.
Yeah.
So what we're learning about panic attacks is this kind of agoraphobic feature, which is the escape. If you don't sense an escape, it'll tend to induce a greater fear.
Right, right.
So what did you do? Take the back roads all the time?
All the time. I mean, it's crippling my life. It's crippling my life.
You and still I haven't do even, it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't even attempted it in like 2 years.
Mm-hmm. So you're always on the back road, back road, back road, but there are certain places you can go.
Exactly.
Because of the panic. Now, what if somebody else is driving?
It all depends on how much I trust them. I'm okay with someone that I trust if I'm a passenger on the highway. But if it's someone I don't trust, I can get myself into a panic attack. And also I've had night terrors about it too.
Well, let me describe the night terrors. The night terrors are a similar kind of thing, okay?
So
here we have, we kind of pick an object. We say it's about the highway. Mm-hmm. But remember, we're saying there's a precondition to certain people. Highways, cars speeding back and forth. Deadly things happening all over me, and I can't escape. That's one for you, right? As I'm talking, you're probably gonna feel the panic coming on.
I sure am. My heart is tacking. Yes.
You're right. You're having it right now, as I'm saying.
Yes.
It, right? Can't go anywhere, and it's just all over you, and it's right and left, and you can't
do it.
Right? Yeah. Okay. That's one. Then another one is in the middle of the night. Your brain triggers, the amygdala triggers this panic response, and your brain says, what's the danger? And your brain recalls the highways. Mm-hmm. So believe it or not, you're not dreaming about the highways, but you're having a panic attack at night.
Mm-hmm.
And the panic brings up the fear of, what am I afraid of? I must be afraid. So it's really secondary.
Gotcha.
So both of these things that are going on, they sound like, have they grown over the years? Have they changed?
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten really worse, and I have a lot of stress in my life. And I actually got to a point where I have a friend who's a grief counselor, so I had her do an exercise with me and go in the car with me on the highway. And, I felt bad for her because it was kind of terrible, and that was like a year ago, and I've just given it up since. And I'm trying to get myself to a point where I'm like, okay, it's just not something I can do, and I have to work around it, like move to a city.
That's one thing that people do, yes, I understand.
You know?
Where do you live?
I live in the suburbs.
What town?
In Pennsylvania, in Bucks County.
In Dutchess County. You know, a couple of people I know out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's really awful.
Yeah, I hear.
So, do you have any suggestions?
Well, yes, I do, because, you know, that which you're calling awful is a conditioned response.
Mm-hmm.
It is not about the highways.
Mm-hmm.
It is about, once this energy gets going, you are going to feel this panic. So, you know, some people, you know, they find I'm sure you've tried medications.
Oh, yes. I never go anywhere without Ativan.
So the Ativan is kind of calms you down a little bit. Ativan kind of relaxes the muscles a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't stop the mental panic that goes about it. They're saying there's never been a medication that goes straight to the amygdala.
Oh, no. It doesn't cure it, that's for sure.
So have you talked to a therapist about this?
Yes. Yes, I have. Yes.
And anybody who is a specialist in dealing with panic?
I'm probably going to have to say no about that. No.
Yeah. There are people we know. Who do we know? I'm talking to Stephanie Dombra. Who is the panic specialist do we know available? Let me just see.
You know what else I was thinking about? Yeah. Like possibly hiring a driving instructor.
Uh-huh.
Because then I thought at least he would have control of the vehicle too. So maybe.
Not maybe a bad that, idea.
Right?
How about a driving instructor psychologist? I could be kind of both. Physician. How about a physician psychologist driving instructor? Well, sounds kind of
mother,
good
father.
Mother, father. Well, what about your mother, father, since we're on the subject? Did you ever feel safe as a kid?
Oh, God, no. No, I no, know. No. Never.
I hate to bring it up.
I don't have a relationship with my father and my mom's dad.
And what was going on when you were a kid that made it such a nerve-wracking childhood?
Oh, my God, it was hell. Like, just, it was two people that really had no business having children. My mom was extremely depressed, and my father was a hypochondriac.
And so did you ever feel safe?
No, not for 1 second.
Yeah, even as a child. So when you would look... Yeah, go ahead.
I kind of just... lived in my own world, you know.
And by living in your own world, you were much safer.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things you've created is you've created a fear that forces you to live in your own world.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
I do.
Your fear forces you to stay within a very small environment. Yeah, that's the ha-ha I always wait for. What was that about?
Wow, that's really true. I mean, I really love small spaces.
Sure.
That's where I'm most comfortable, you know? I can't even stand, like, standing on a high stairway where I feel like the sides are open. I feel like I'm going to fall off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So you'd sound young enough to me. How old are you? You're about 52?
I'm exactly 52.
I thought so. So
that was good.
I know. I'm like that. What's your name?
My name is Francesca.
Francesca. Looking over your shoulder. Hey, Francesca, you got plenty of time. We don't want to dig this in. We don't want to make this deeper. We want to be able to get out of it. I don't want you to give up on this, you know? And I don't know how we're going to get you out of it. Mm-hmm. Do you have Skype?
Say that again?
Do you have Skype? You know what Skype is?
No.
Okay.
S-K-Y-P-E. Y-P-E?
Yeah. It's a Mac. It's a program on a computer.
On Mac?
Mostly Macintosh. Do you have a Macintosh?
Yeah, I do. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Does it have a camera in it?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's beautiful. Then you could get Skype.
Okay.
Here's what we're going to do. It's free.
Okay.
You're going to hook into Skype, and then you're going to look up. You're going to look me up.
Okay.
And you're going to send me a message that you're available.
Okay.
And you and I are going to talk on Skype. It'll cost you nothing.
Wow,
no charge.
Fabulous.
No charge. I've got a few minutes. Okay? And you may have to look. Let me see where you look for me. Look under Armand Hothouse Flower.
Well, I'm in a car right now.
Yeah, well, not right this minute.
Okay.
Oh, right. Absolutely. Look at Armand. Look up the Positive Mind, and you'll find the connection to the Skype connection, okay?
And I should email you?
Well, yes. Email me and let me know when you're hooked up with Skype and you've downloaded the program.
Okay.
So face-to-face, I want to look and I want to see. And, you know, I've got a few minutes. I will have 5 minutes for you to talk to you, and then maybe we could direct you somewhere, because I don't want you to go on to your 53rd year this way. 52 is the magical transformational year.
And I have so many things I want to do, and I would get there so much quicker by the highway.
Yeah, but you wouldn't see as much. Do you know what I mean? You really wouldn't see as much. The trouble with highways is there's so little scenery by comparison. But we'll talk, okay? And you're doing great, Francesca.
Thank you so much.
Sure, my pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. age guesser. I should get a little bunny rabbit every time I do that. You know, or a little something. 212-209-2900. You're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hi.
Hello?
Hello there.
Yes, my name is Mary. This is my first time calling.
Hello, Mary. Welcome to WBAI.
I'm very nervous about
Welcome
calling.
To the Positive Mind.
I never normally would call, but I wanted to share something.
Tell me.
I had suffered from panic disorder and agoraphobia for like 20 years. I'm 38 now. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to recommend a book that really helped me.
Good.
I don't know if you're familiar with Claire Weeks.
Weeks, W-E-E-K-S, right?
Yes.
Yes, I am.
It was from Australia, and it was the only thing that really transformed my life, and I have so much freedom now, and I feel that I'm recovered but not cured for 18 years, and I wanted to share that with other
people. What was the essence of what Claire Weeks said to you that made the difference?
I think explaining physically what was going on and not trying to figure it out and just being in the moment and accepting and dealing on a day-to-day, and there was three books, and that was because I was, you know, had therapy, I was even hospitalized, medication, and this was the only thing that really, and a supportive family, that transformed my life.
Yes, and you did, and they all helped you together.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, congratulations, and how
Thank
does
you.
It feel calling in the radio program?
Oh, I'm having a panic attack just calling.
Is there a panic attack going on right now? Now, let's talk about this. It's not a panic attack. Your heart's beating fast.
Yes, yes.
You're
right,
excited.
No, it's not. It's definitely not a panic attack. I don't feel like I have to escape, but I was hoping you wouldn't pick up, because then I wouldn't have to talk.
Yeah. Well,
but
talking,
if it could help someone else.
You're talking, and loads of people are hearing you, and you have helped.
I hope
by
so.
Just saying what's helped you.
And I used to be afraid of the highway. I used to take every back road. And it wasn't, it was just, and I still use it. You know, I don't think you're ever cured, even though it's been 20 years. But just the Claire Weeks program, and you could get the book Amazon under $10. So it's the best thing out there. It really is. For me, it was.
Good for you, Mary. Thanks so much for calling
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Such a good group of people. Let's see if we got time for one more call. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand.
Yes.
This is Toots from Harlem.
Hello, Toots. Hi there.
When I was a kid, I used to be a bedwetter. And my parents used to, my father used to whip me.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and also I was born in, the hospital I was born in, Bellevue.
Mm-hmm.
My brothers and sisters used to tease me, tell me I was crazy because I was born in Bellevue.
Mm.
You know, that I was insane. So, I closed off from everybody.
I don't blame you, Toots.
Coming up. So, I used drugs as a way of dealing with life.
Right here.
And I'm 62 years old, and I'm just beginning to understand that fear, just like fear is a two-edged sword too, man. It cuts both ways. Just like, I can't explain it, but I'm glad I'm listening to you for a lot of years, Armand, and you have helped me tremendously to deal with myself, you know?
Oh, Toots, I'm so proud. I'm so glad.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, and keep it up. I hear you. I hear you. I'm glad you finally found one safe place, huh? Thanks for calling in. Anytime you want, Toots. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Beautiful people. We will be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. You could go to the website, thepositivemind.com, and you should be able to download this program. I'm sorry, you could go to WBAI.org, and you could hear it there as well. Thanks for being with us. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Thank you.
Tune in Sunday, June 7th from 4 to 6 p.m. for the next report from the WBI Local Station Board. This month, you'll be introduced to various members of the board who will talk about their responsibilities and recent developments throughout the Pacifica network. And then they'll ask for your ideas on how to build a stronger WBI. So mark that date on your calendar, Sunday, June 7th, 4 to 6 p.m., for a report from the WBI Local Station Board, only on WBI in New York, 99.5 on your FM dial.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! On June 12th at 7 p.m., join us for an evening with Noam Chomsky, Crisis and Hope, theirs and ours. Noam Chomsky comes to the historic Riverside Church in Harlem to address a wide range of issues, from the economic crisis to the war in the Middle East and South Asia to the election of Barack Obama. This talk is sponsored by the Brecht Forum and Riverside Church Ministries of Social Justice and Education. For more information and tickets, please contact 212-242-4201. That's 212-242-4201. Or go to www.brechtforum.org.
Wednesday, June 3rd, come to a town hall meeting on torture and the need for justice at the Ethical Culture Society. Obama is suppressing the photo evidence, refusing to prosecute, and is legitimating military commissions of preventive detention. Join Laura Flanders, Gitanjali Gutierrez, Chris Hedges, Sister Diane Ortiz, Michael Ratner, Jeremy Scahill, Andy Z, Gita City Girl, and others for a Revolution Books town hall meeting held at the New York Society for Ethical Culture at 2 West 64th Street on Wednesday, June 3rd. We must act now. Call 212-691-3345. That's 212-691-3345.
It's a minute before 2 p.m. and you're tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI and WBAI.org. My name is Michael G. Haskins, your radio host and guide. Again, thank you all very, very much for your contributions, your generous contributions during our spring fundraising and membership drive. And all throughout the past hour, hour and a half, the tally lights were lit intermittently. People were ringing that phone, presumably calling in to pledge to WBAI. But again, we have made our goal, and in fact surpassed our goal, first time in a long, long time that we did that. If you want to subscribe to this radio station right now, you need to log on to our website, WBAI.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.